So,
but what I mean
who
is,
who delivers those students? The publishers.
But do you, yes. But do you think almost like a certain generation of musicians almost had to like sacrifice themselves so that other musicians who followed them were better for it?
Depends. How far do you want to go back in these horror stories?
What's the worst that you know of?
That had to be in the old days. Well, the old days, the 40s and 50s. Black artists. They sold. See, in America, it's a different copyright law. You can sell your songs in America, you can't sell them in Canada. They belong to the creator. You can never lose that. In America, you, in those days, you sold them. What's his name? Guitar, black guitar. Mike Dingley.
Chuck Berry.
Chuck Berry. Is a prime example. Sure, he got ripped off, but what did he know? If he got $50 for a tune, he was happy. But when they found later on the amount of money that it generated, of course he was mad.
Yeah.
You know, but you hear the stories of him stomping into the record company and put his royalties and they give him the keys to a Cadillac. Off he went. He was happy.
Sure.
So if you're happy, how can you be ripped off?
So how much do you think that...
Only because of education. You don't know.
Yeah.
And if it wasn't for the publishers, those tunes would have never been recorded by other people.
Mm-hmm.
But Elvis, all those black tunes that he recorded. Black artists, black writers. Never made it with other publishers. Elvis didn't write tunes. Got a piece of the publisher. Wanted Elvis to record their album. You're one of your songs, you give them the publisher.
Do you think that the law about the creator, the copyright law here, has in fact like helped protect a certain era of musicians who...
Yeah, because you could never lose that here.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, that's like being an artist here. You have a painting. Although, you created that, maybe you sold it.
Right.
Well, how do you think people like Renoir would feel today if they knew what their paintings were signed for?
You know, right.
But, you know, the family still own, if that was created here, those families still own the copyright painting. You know? And I believe, I could be wrong, but you can't just buy a painting and all of a sudden start running printed editions off of it, you know, limited editions. I mean, you don't own that right.
Right. You can still sell your songs, right? Here, can you not? You can sell your publishing, but not the song itself. Is that...
You can sell the publishing, but not the writing.
Right.
Like if you wrote a tune, you sold it to me for $5.
Right.
I only get half of it, which is the publisher's side.
I see.
Right. I will always, forever and ever.
Right.
Get that.
Right.
For, I don't know, 50, 75 years after your death or whatever it is now.
And I wonder if that can be directly tied into the fact that so many people I've interviewed from the first couple of waves of musicians, nobody seems very bitter or frank. Like, everybody seems very frank and very honest and very upfront and very...
Just because they didn't lose it all. Guys like Chuck Berry lost it all.
Right, but that's... Is that maybe the difference between Canadian people from that generation to compared to... Like, I mean, has our laws protected the help secured futures for these, you know?
Yeah, I would think so.
Yeah.
I mean, looked after the creators.
Are there specials today? Our soup and sandwiches, chicken vegetable soup,
which,
with an egg salad sandwich.
Believe me, they would have sold off long ago.
Salad. Fries or salad.
Didn't know or didn't care. If you wrote a song, somebody's going to give you $100, and you had the money in your pocket and you're hungry.
Right.
What would you do?
Of course.
So now you're protected. You really only sold half of the income.
Yeah.
And you still own that song, although it's controlled by the publisher.
How did you feel when the Maple Law came into effect, the 33 and a 30%?
I don't know. Did you want something to drink? I'll get you a drink.
30% Canadian content? You were talking about radio play? It was good and it was bad. It was a minimum that became a maximum. Put a lot of money in Gordon Lightfoot's pocket. not being derogative to Gordon. Gordon is extremely talented. But, you know, you got your airplay between 2 and 4 in the morning. I mean, I sat on those boards. I sat at the CRTC and argued and fought. And was it good? Yeah, it was good. But it was resentful from the broadcaster's point of view. Why are you making us do this? At one time, to be honest, there wasn't 30% country in this country. There was lots of country artists. They didn't seem to have a problem. The early days, Chum FM. You even go back as late as the beginning of Rush. There was not 30% format for Chum FM in those days. Canadian.
What was it estimated for your...
10, maybe. A good day, you know. But Chum and FM was different. Different quotas. I think it was about 10% or 15%. But on AM radio, Rush never got AM radio play. A little bit. In America, but not in Canada. Very, very little. Fly by Night, I think, got a little bit of airplay.
Closer to the heart.
They didn't write for AM radio. They wrote for FM. They weren't singles writers. No. If it was there, so pull it off. They didn't care. They didn't write singles. They didn't want to. And I still think today, to this day, they don't care. They don't want to write. And they stuck to their guns, and I take my hat off to them. They did what they did, and they did it well.
Do you think broadcasters are still resentful that they have to play 30% Canadian content?
Sure.
Do you think that's why they bury most Canadian stuff at night?
Well, I'll go back and... music directors are also, in their own mind, producers. Yeah, well, you know, I don't like this. You know, this is wrong with this. They should have done this. That's not your job. Your job is to let the public decide what they want to hear. Every record that is manufactured by rights should be aired to the masses. And let them decide. It's not up to the program director to decide what the people hear. But that's not the way it is. And they'd be flooded. I mean, now I know what it's like to say, should I still get tapes sent to me? There's tons and tons of everybody recorded. Back in the 70s, not everybody recorded. There was a few select groups that were recording. And then everybody. And everybody became an independent label. Anybody could be an independent label. Go in and do your thing, and go to some company, they'll print you up 1,000 pieces, and you go to Joe Radio, and you sell it, and you're an independent label. I've seen people in the Juno Awards with less than 1,000 pieces sold, in the running for an award. Is it right?
They're pretty spread pretty thin, I think, at the Junos. I want to ask you a bit about your studio experiences playing Flip Flop Fly, the recording of that song. When you guys were laying it down, did you have a pretty good idea that you were doing something that was going to last a long time?
No, actually, that wasn't even the... That wasn't the original first single off that album. I Need Almost was what they wanted to say. Actually, Ray and I sat with the manager and said, that's not the song. The song is Flip Flop. That came out as a single. It was the biggest single Donnie's ever had. I still think to this day.
Probably, yeah.
And it launched the band. That was good times. And that was 1973. It was 25 years ago. It was done in Toronto Sound. Terry Brown was on the board. Alan Duffy and they produced it. And it just went from there for Donnie. That was a big break for Donnie. But he had come off of Spadina playing Rosemary's Tavern. That's the only little gigs that he had. And then he escalated. Donnie can still go from coast to coast. He does it every year. Does his fair share of thing. He lives up to at the lake in the summer, goes to Florida, and Donnie's happy. Donnie doesn't care if he plays Madison Square Garden. Like to. He's played with all those big guys. He's jammed with them. That's all part of being easy. He's known within the clique of the Blues. Mm-hmm. The Blues Brothers did a great thing. They did I Got Everything You Need Almost that was on their album. But, Aykroyd loves the band.
Yeah.
He loves Donnie.
Yeah. You
know, whatever band is with Donnie. Mm-hmm. It's what it is.
Did him and his brother...
Hawk.
Yeah. Do they still play together?
No.
Do they have a falling out?
Yeah. Brothers.
Well, yeah, of course.
Rick did the straight up. He did the first one. Did the straight up album. And I think he was gone after that.
Hmm.
And, 20 Flame came in.
Right.
Now it's... what's his name?
Don't know.
That happens with ages.
Yeah. That song's cool. The great thing of Flip is that it starts with the horn line. Yeah. There's so few songs. When that comes on the radio.
Old
well, I know, yeah, but I mean,
he does record that.
Yeah, eh? He did an album of Canadian songs. Is that what he did?
No, Donnie didn't write that song. That's an old blues.
What, Flip Flop Flop? Oh, okay. Didn't know
that was recorded.
Okay, I thought, okay.
I don't know who the original was. Escapes me.
Right. I always thought he wrote it. So he wouldn't have got publishing on the Blues Brothers.
I got Everything I Need Almost in Europe.
Right.
Which were on the Blues Brothers, which he got paid for.
Okay.
He was also, Donnie was probably still the publisher too.
Right.
That was, there's another independent label.
Right.
Special Records.
Special Records.
And that came from Donnie's first album. That first album was recorded at Rochdale College.
Yeah, I know, yeah.
The bass, sound horn, and that came from the wall, on the wall. As you went up to come out of the parking lot, you had to turn the corner and carry on. And before you turn the corner, you beat your horn. Oncoming traffic near your turn. That's where the name of the studio comes from.
Sound horn. Great.
Or horn sound.
You do that scene, the whole Rochdale?
We used to rehearse there.
Oh yeah? This would be pretty funny, the characters that are around there. Jeez.
It was wild. It was literally wild. There's nobody in the show.
In Yorkville too? Did you do the Yorkville thing?
Yeah. We were one of the first rock and roll bands ever to play Yorkville at the Cafe El Patio downstairs. Bernie Finkelstein used to wipe tables and do dishes.
Like the sound of that.
We're all really good friends for a lot of years. He was there in those days. That was probably, I have to think about that one, 63, 64, before the village was the village. I mean, it was just a rundown area town.
Right.
And it started to come up from there. And people like Grant came out, just a time. There was a lot of bands came out of there. Well, Gordon Lightfoot used to play the riverboat all the time.
Mm-hmm.
There was a riverboat, there was a Cafe El Patio. Basically, that was the beginnings of everything.
Neil Young was around too?
The Night Owl was right at the end of Yorkville. And that's where, what's the name? Skip Brokaw.
Right.
The Poppers.
Poppers, yeah.
Well, Bernie managed the Poppers.
Right. See the Minor Birds? Do you ever see them?
It's
Rick James and Neil Young.
Ricky James, yeah. Ricky James used to throw off stage.
You used to throw them off?
It was terrible. It was awful. We used to come up and sing the downshot all the time. We'd let do one number and try and do two or three. We kind of just squeeze them off the stage.
Danny Marks told me some horrible Rick James stories. Nobody liked those stories.
They played in the Minor Bird Club, and that's where they came from. You know?
Right, right.
That was on the corner.
Do you have any impressions of Neil Young?
I didn't know Neil Young. He was gone by then. I mean, he was with the Buffalo Sports.
Right, right.
Then he left. I really didn't know Neil Young.
Gord Lightfoot, did you run into
him? I know Gord.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's had a lot of ups and downs.
Yeah.
He's made a lot of money. He did well in America, Gordon. He came out of that folk era.
Albert Grossman.
Yeah. Before him was the Peter Paul Marys, the Kingston Trios. Gordon's in his 60s, huh?
He's doing Massey Hall.
He could do that until the day he dies. I mean, he could have his brother, and it'll still fill him.
Yeah, that's right.
He's looking old, but aren't we all? He's paid his dues.
Totally. Yeah. So if you had advice for someone wanting to get involved in music, are there any words of wisdom you'd like to impart?
Don't quit your digging.
Heard that before.
You'll always hear it. Oh, I don't know where it's. It's what you make of it, Jim. If you believe in something wholeheartedly and nothing could change your mind, more than likely you'll be successful at it.
Stubborn.
Stubborn. Once read a book, How to Be Successful. And basically what it says, if you believe in it, do it.
Yeah.
And that's basically what it boils down to. And if you want to open a bar and have a great bar, you can do it. It's like your job, if you want to be the best at what you are, you work really hard, whether it's being an auto mechanic, or a pump jock, at a gas station.
Yeah, sure.
It's all, if you love your job, it'll work. Nine times out of ten. I mean, there's some brilliant musicians and songwriters that just didn't get that break. And it's a little out of luck.
Mm-hmm.
Being in the right place at the right time. There's a huge amount. Back in the 50s and 60s, the days of Temptations and Miracles, for every band that made it like them, there was one on every street corner in Detroit, New York, Chicago,
145.
That's right.
Yeah.
And in the early, in the 50s, that's what you recorded.
Yeah.
And Ray Charles, he was recording in the 40s.
Mm-hmm.
Still it. He's a superstar in his own way. Does he fill Anaheim Stadium? No. But he doesn't have to.
Yeah. It's beyond that almost.
Well, when you said about it, Flip-flop, Fly, I thought Donnie Walsh wrote it. Who wrote Georgia? Ray Charles?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Paul Carmichael wrote it. Okay, so
sure.
There you go.
Sure. Wow. Colby Carmichael wrote a lot of good songs.
Yeah, I think there was two guys, Carmichael and somebody else.
He worked with that big speeder.
Well, it's, I can't tell you the tape because it's hearsay, but I got it. It's the only song that I ever saw where it was number one and number 50 in Billboard the same week. Same song. Two different artists.
Right.
One was in the place, one was Little Caesar. And that was a political move. So we made some bad judgment.
Yeesh.
And you know who it is, too. You really, unless I told you.
Right.
It was a bad judgment call.
Sure.
They wanted to do it. This is a true story. They wanted to. Caesar and the Constance go to the Cow Palace and go on tour with the Beach Boys when they had their hit going. They hang on slow. And Bruce wouldn't leave his job. And you know what? Probably made the right move. But may have been the wrong move.
Hey.
Could have been the right place, but have been the wrong time.
You wanted to go on tour?
Well, sure. That was before I was with the band.
Right.
That was in 65. I went with the band in 68.
Yay. It's funny how it can turn on a dime, like you never know. you never know. And you can't look back and you can't second guess yourself. I mean, everybody does, but you can't.
Hindsight is 20/20.
Man, oh man.
So who have you talked to about this? A week. Bruce Paul Boogie Band. Band's a Duncan White played for Bruce Paul Boogie Band. Duncan White was in the business before I was. I remember him. Duncan Judy and the Regents, which was probably in the late 50s. The little season of concerts started in 1956.
Man, that's early.
But there was other bands around, the Emeralds, which was a Chinese band. All the guys were Chinese. Come out of Chinatown, called the Emeralds.
Like a rock and roll band?
Yeah.
Cool.
I don't know how much research or where your book is, what direction you're going.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of people you can talk to.
Yeah. Oh, I know. Too many.
Brian Scribner was the first agent of this country.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been.
Except for... He wouldn't allow you to be doing that. Shit, what's his name out of Hamilton? Harold Cutlets. Cutlets. Still to this day manages Levi Hall.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Harold worked at the Connaught Hotel. That's where his office was.
Wow.
Billy O'Connor. Billy O'Connor's still playing. He's 85. But he was an agent that put us in all these Northern Circuit pubs.
Right.
He had the rooms. And Mandela worked for him with the Rogues at that time.
Right. Well,
I worked for him. All those bands worked for him.
Yeah. What was I going to say? Mentioned somebody that I'm going to talk to. Oh yeah, Bobby Curtola. I guess he's 80 this year.
80? No shit. Yeah. Bobby?